Hi, I'm Mike Collins. We'll get to the Charlotte Talks podcast in just a moment. First, I want to tell you about a special public conversation I'm hosting, and you're invited to join me and several of Charlotte's African-American leaders for Building an Inclusive City. That's on February 21st, 7 p.m. at Spirit Square. We'll be talking with Charlotte's mayor, police chief, city manager, and district attorney. Details and free registration at WFAE.org, and we hope to see you there. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Today we begin something new, monthly conversations with Charlotte Mayor Vi Lyles about the key issues facing the city and its residents. As New Jersey Senator Cory Booker says,
this is an opportunity for us to talk to one of the most exciting mayors in America today. Mayor Lyles is discovering that in her new role as Charlotte's mayor, that she can make things happen in many ways in a way we don't see necessarily happening in Washington.
That's actually from Senator Booker's podcast, which we'll talk about a little bit later. And this hour, we really want to hear from you through all the usual channels. Email us at charlottetalks at WFAE.org. Get us on Twitter at Charlotte Talks or on Facebook, where we're also broadcasting on Facebook Live this morning. And we are opening the phones. 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323. Mayor Vi Lyles, welcome back.
Good morning.
Good
Mike.
To see you. You got us blocked out every month now? You've got it on your calendar?
I do have you blocked out every month. I hope you'll continue to block me out every month. That's the real question.
We've ruined your life.
No.
Well, let's go back to Cory Booker's podcast. That was a real surprise. It's called Lift Every Voice. That's the name of his podcast. You were just on at the start of Black History Month, which, of course, is February. And the senator said he wanted to kick off this month with someone who is, quote, an inspiration to him and the community. How do you know each other? How does he know you? Is it just that you're fellow Democrats?
Well, it starts off that way. But as you campaign, you realize there is a community of people that have run for office, some successful and some not. And they reach out to you. And you establish first that introduction, then that email. And then as you see, when you're successful in office, Cory Booker's a senator, but more importantly, he was a mayor. And he offered to support me in times that I may have a question about, well, what happened here and why did you do it that way? And that community is made up of the mayors of many cities. And I was in Washington and he said, why don't you come over and do this? And it was a really fabulous experience. He is truly someone that experienced urban growth in a positive way from a city that perhaps wasn't seen positively, and now he's in the Senate talking about these issues.
He was mayor of Newark.
That's
right. Newark, New Jersey, which doesn't have the most stellar reputation of any city in the country, but evidently he's rumored to have done a very good job of being mayor of that city.
The thing that he taught me is that I looked at his career, and he was out and about in the neighborhoods. He was out in the community, and that's one of the things that I think makes a mayor successful.
Let's hear again what he said about you at the top of his program.
This is an opportunity for us to talk to one of the most exciting mayors in America today. Mayor Lyles is discovering that in her new role as Charlotte's mayor, that she can make things happen in many ways in a way we don't see necessarily happening in Washington.
Did that description surprise you at all? It's pretty glowing.
It did surprise me. I think that what he was trying to draw as a distinction is that when you're the mayor of a city, you actually can get things done locally. The further away you are from the people, it becomes more about bigger policies, bigger words, bigger impact. But when you're on the ground in a city, things happen. You can actually say, we're going to put in that traffic signal. You're going to see pedestrian crosswalks. Those are the things that I think he was pointing out.
On his Twitter feed, he called you, Cory Booker called you, a real change maker on his show. He also cited you and your long life of service and your story as a testimony to, this is a quote, as a testimony to the idea that the story of the Black American experience and Black history is mission-oriented. Is that how you see what you've done? Is that how you see your story?
I guess I don't think about it until someone actually describes it to me. I kind of listen to people tell stories about me, and then I recognize, yes, that really truly is an authentic story. That's something that I would not tell. I grew up in a family that was hardworking, valued work, valued entrepreneurship. I grew up in a family that really looked at service and faith in the way that we could, and a family that supported each other. You know, I tell the story about when my father's business needed money. He couldn't go to a bank, and so he went to family members, and that's how our exchange of credit was really within an extended family. So those are the kinds of things that when you learn that and you get into the world that we live today where you can see these disparities, you know what really happened to you, and you can say, how should that have been different? Why couldn't he go into a bank and get a loan? And you have that story of the years of disparity to create opportunity, and you don't talk about it in the abstract.
We still have disparity, and one of the things that you talked to Cory Booker about and one of the things that was discussed most recently at the City Council retreat in Durham is affordable housing. You say that we are about two-thirds of the way toward a three-year goal to add 5,000 affordable housing units, but that's far short of what we need, and more existing units are disappearing every single day because the city grows by 44 people, I think, every single day. We've been talking about affordable housing, the dearth of it, how to find more of it, what can be done to make more of it, what can be done to keep more of it. For years on this program and in this city, the city doesn't have a lot of tools in its tool bag to make this happen. But you say you would consider it a success if Charlotte helped preserve four or five complexes, already built apartment complexes, in the next 2 years. And you'd say you'd want to move on this as quickly as possible. Can you do that? What would it take to do that?
So first, Mike, I know that in the role that you have, you know how quickly things become fresh and then move quickly to old. And so when I talk about the 5,000 units that we were going to do, we had a goal of 5,000 units in 5 years in 2016 as a council. And what we said is let's accelerate that same goal, preserving and building new housing. And we are on the route. And that was right after the Keith Lamont shooting.
Right.
So when we talk about what's going on now, think about the development pressure that's taking place from the apartments that were built that are affordable now. They were built in the 70s and the 80s, and the life cycle of those apartments are either going to mean that they have to be reconditioned, refurbished, and brought up to date, or they're going to be torn down. And my fear is that we will tear down apartments where people are paying under $1,000 a month for apartments that are going to cost more than $1,000 a month. When we do that, we become a less diverse city, and that diversity is around income levels and job opportunities. We're not growing our transportation system to make it easy for people to get to work. We are actually trying to recalibrate our bus system for routes that will get more radial instead of linear, and all of those things matter when we're going to have a diverse population. So yes, I do think it's important. And the city council actually, with the support of a number of the private sector citizens that care about this, are saying that we can do this. We can acquire apartments that are affordable and either keep people in them or cause new opportunities for people to move in.
When you say we can acquire these apartments, who is we?
So the we in this is that it's a partnership. I talk about how Charlotte was built on cooperation and collaboration, and that's with the private sector, the industries and the businesses that are here that have a commitment to their workforce or a commitment to our mission as to be the greatest city in the Southeast. And those folks step up along with government. And when I say government, I'm not talking about all of us that work in it, but every year, every 2 years, the citizens of this community have approved affordable housing bonds at 60% plus. So I'm talking about the citizens that see this as an important issue and provide the financing for it.
But you're working, I would think, against really, it's like working against a force of nature because you're working against economics, you're working against rising land values, you're working against developers who are in business not to give money away but to make money for their shareholders and themselves. And you're working in a city where, as we just said, affordable housing is disappearing because development is rampant, because growth is rampant. And how do you fight all these forces and convince somebody to take less money or to hold back so that people can afford to live?
Okay, so I'm never going to say I'm fighting with people, because I know in this community, you and I've been here a long time, and in this community, there have always been people that were able to be very successful, and they still cared about those that work for them or they are hiring.
Do we still live in that world?
We need to do.
You're exactly right. Your comparison to what used to be is true. Do we still live in that world?
I know we do live in this world. Sitting in the mayor's office, when big issues happen, I get a number of calls from mm-hmm. people. And the corporate world, in our neighborhood world, even in the grocery store, people will come up to me and they say, how can I help you be the best mayor possible? And I reach out and I say, yes, you can help. There are people that are willing to do this. We had a group of housing developers at our retreat. There are many of them, the Charlotte Mecklenburg Housing Partnership, Laurel Market. We had Liz there, the Foundation for the Carolinas. They came to our retreat to provide resources to us, and they helped us. We had a grid, you know, the old strength analysis, strongly opportunity, and mm-hmm. all of those mm-hmm. things that they actually created a chart out of all of our ideas and said, these are the things that will really make an impact and can be done quickly. And the apartment complexes were right in the middle of that.
You mentioned the Foundation for the Carolinas. There, Brian Collier was at your retreat, and he says it is cheaper to save the affordable housing that we have now than to build affordable housing from the ground up. But either way, what it takes is money.
Somehow we've got to find a pot of money that allows organizations and developers and others to take property that is currently on the market and keep it affordable housing. You're losing it every day.
So this is a race against time in a way, isn't it?
It is. And so we hear from the people that are in the affordable market that we have 90 days often when someone decides to come to make a decision to sell that a complex, that they will have many people interested. So our challenge, and I say our, but let me be more specific, the city council's challenge is to put money aside that could be accessed quickly to get those apartments under contract. And then we can work on the rehabilitation of them, decide our deed restrictions for affordable rates. But when Brian talked about that, it's true. And he says, you know, it's cheaper to build or retain those complexes. And when I say it's an investment in maintaining the people that live in those complexes so that they don't further go down on our disparity front. Many of you know Mayor Pro Tem Isolt has been working with a family individually. She has taken this on. And if they lose their affordable unit inside the city and have to move out further, that means they have to have a reliable car. That means that child has to change her school. There's all kinds of disruptions if we don't keep people mm-hmm. in their affordable units. And we've got to do more of that.
So if the city's successful in purchasing more of these affordable units, do you then rehab them? Do you bring them up to 21st century standards, or do you just simply make sure that the plumbing doesn't leak and that the there are no holes in the wall? And what do you do? What is the city's obligation beyond purchasing those units and making them available?
The city's obligation is to make sure that those units are of a level that we would all want to live in. I feel like if there's an apartment that's going to be rehabbed, it should be rehabbed so I feel comfortable living there. I always tell people it doesn't matter whether your house is $900,000 or $90,000, it ought to feel like it's home for you, and mm-hmm. that's what we're trying to do. And apartments are the same way. I'm not saying we're all going to have shiny new appliances. That's not what people are looking for. What they're looking for is that they don't have to worry about the insecurity of paying their rent. And that's what makes the difference. So, yes, they will be rehabbed. They will be brought up to a standard that people will feel like, I can afford this unit and I can pay this rent.
We're going to talk more about this and how you go about this and how you convince developers who could probably make more money tearing these places down and putting up something else. How do you convince them to sell it to you when we come back? And we'll take your calls and comments as well. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Today is our first in our series of monthly conversations with Charlotte's new mayor, Vi Lyles, who took office in December 4th. And we're a wide-ranging conversation today about everything from affordable housing to new city council members and domestic violence, homicides, and more. And we want to hear from you through email and Facebook and Twitter. We already have some comments that I'll share with you in a moment about that. And at 704-926-WFAE, that's 704-926-9323. And we'll take our first call for you, Mayor, from Tanico in Charlotte. Tanico, welcome.
Hi. Thanks to you guys for your service. I love the station. And thank you so much, Vi Lyles, for what you're doing. My question is, you were speaking about the affordable housing and when they go up for sale by developers, how you need the money to purchase them. So in the event you do have the money to purchase those properties, how do you turn that to affordable housing into ownership? Is that something that you guys think about versus keeping them as rental units?
I am so glad you asked that, Tamiko. This week on February the 8th, there's an organization called NACA, and they're going to be at Executive Center Drive, and they provide affordable home ownership mortgages. You can come down and apply for a mortgage. You can refinance your mortgage, and the rates can be from 0.001 up to 3.03. So we had an example of a pediatric nurse at Carolinas Medical Center went in. She was paying $1,100 a month for rent. She is now in a townhouse that she purchased, a young woman, millennial, she called herself. A millennial now lives in a three-bedroom house with a mortgage of under $900. So go to Executive Center Drive. Go on their website, www.naca.org, and look at their program for home ownership. The units that we are talking about for our city program, yes, we're trying to keep the rents affordable, but it's not just everybody doesn't want to live in a home. But if you do want to live in a home and it's an affordable mortgage that you need, go to the workshop. Again, go to www.naca, N-A-C-A. And then if you look at what we're trying to do is create options. So there will be rentals that are affordable. And the way that we do that is kind of something just back office talk, but we ask the owner to give us a deed restriction keeping the rents affordable from anywhere between 15 to 20 years.
And what do they get in return?
What they get in return is, and they continue their investment, and you ask the question about why do you get developers to do this? Think about the cycle, and I'm not a real estate developer, so I'm going to depend on someone that may call in and make this even better, that we have people that when you have your real estate investment, you have a certain tax credit and tax benefits, and then those may end at 20 or 30 years. So what are you looking for, to make more money to pay taxes on, or are you willing to take a lower return? And so sometimes the units that we're talking about have actually, for the investor, they have the opportunity that they are saying, well, I can make enough money, not necessarily more money.
Is this a new approach, or has this been going on for a while?
I think for Charlotte, it's something that we've really started to look at, because one of the best things about the Economic Opportunity Report was that it spread the information wider in different communities and different places that we had great needs on housing. And what I have found when I've talked to people that are working around this program, they say, I know that I have a choice here, making a difference and still making a return, mm-hmm. and they're willing to do that. So I think we're going to have cooperation in the development community to be successful.
Tanico, thank you for your call. Let me go to Julia, who has a different affordable housing question. Julia in Charlotte, welcome.
Oh, hey.
Hey.
I live in the Thomasboro neighborhood, and a lot of my neighbors have landlords that won't care for their property. And they've been wondering, and we've been talking about as a neighborhood, what do we do? If we report the landlords, they're afraid their properties will be condemned and they'll have no other place to live.
Julia,
what do we want to do as a neighborhood?
Julia, this is Vi, and what I want to say is, first of all, Thomasboro is a great neighborhood. When you come off of 85 and see the beautiful faith-based community there, when you see all of the housing, you've got some great neighborhoods. So, yes, a lot of those have become rentals. The Neighborhood Association, I would suggest two things. First, get yourself organized and then call 311 and ask for the code enforcement officer that works in your neighborhood. Call him out for the meeting. Tell him what you want and ask him how to, or him or her, how to accomplish that in a way. We've had this happen in other neighborhoods, and it's really important. The next thing I would say is that the city's goal is not to have landlords tear down their houses. We actually have a rehab program, rehabilitation program, where we encourage landlords and owners to renovate those properties and not take them off of the market. So call 311, get your code enforcement officer out, get your neighborhood meeting, and let's get started.
Julia, thanks for calling. We have an affordable housing trust fund in Charlotte, and every 2 years, voters decide on how much money will go into that fund. And last time that the vote was taken, I believe $15 million was the figure decided upon. And then the city manager, Marcus Jones, added about $6 million to that fund over 5 years. At your retreat recently, Democratic Councilwoman Luana Mayfield, who chairs the council's Housing and Neighborhood Development Committee, said she thinks that number, that $15 million number, ought to go up.
I don't know if we're ready to put a number on it, and I don't think the community should hold council to a number without knowing legally and financially, without raising your taxes, what can we actually take on in debt.
So the Economic Mobility Task Force has recommended boosting that to $50 million. Is that something that could easily be sold to taxpayers? How is that tax fund funded?
So you've got a lot of questions in
I
there,
do,
Mike.
Yes.
So first, the Economic Opportunity Task Force said up to $50 million. They were trying to gauge how much need we had and to tell us that what we're doing isn't enough to get there. So I really respect that, because I do know that our community has supported these bonds. As I said, 60% of our voters plus have said we should always invest in affordability for housing. So you ask the question, how much? Councilmember Mayfield is the chair of our committee that deals with these issues, and she has been charged with the idea of coming up with the top three priorities for the strategic housing plan. You know, one of those, I hope, will always be that apartment complex, buying of those properties and rehabbing those. So what I expect is that we have a budget process coming up, that we will actually sit down and say, here are the top three things that we think will have the highest impact on that need, and we will fund it and put that number in play. I believe that what has changed is that the community is so aware of this problem, it's so visible to everyone right now, that that's why the money is about how do we allocate the money that we have for our capital budget, and how do we invest it in the priorities. And I believe the top priority for our capital investment includes transportation options, housing for people so that they can continue to live in our community, as well as the things that support creating opportunity, job opportunities especially.
So this Affordable Housing Trust Fund, is that where the money comes from to help you rehab and maintain and purchase where necessary affordable housing that already exists?
That is in addition, yes, that is the fund that we use. Okay. And we also get some funding from the federal government in the millions of dollars, probably around $10 million that we also use for that fund for renovations and rehab and support of other efforts around our community building.
We used to have public housing in these roped-off areas, essentially, and we decided that that was not a good way to do it, and the city has been encouraging for years now affordable housing be spread out all over the area instead of these pockets of poverty. Chanel emails, and that's been a difficult slog for the city, because not in my neighborhood seems to rear its ugly head. Chanel emails, what is in place at the city level that allows an overabundance of multifamily apartments in one or two areas of Charlotte and not others? For example, there are so many mid-rise, 5-6-story, lower-rent apartment buildings near the university with more planned. Why can't there be equitable distribution?
Well, there are a couple of really good questions in that, Chanel. One of the things is that a lot of times when we look at these communities, some of them are privately done. That's not something that we control. The city really controls only those areas where are affordable units that we invest our money in.
But so can a lot you control of this, it through zoning?
No, we cannot control it through zoning. If there is a rezoning, perhaps, but when people have what they call by right zoning in Charlotte, you have the right to build your, to use your property as it's currently zoned. If you want, and we're looking at that, if you want a change in that rezoning, yes, there's some opportunity for us to talk about that. Think about the River District, where we had discussions on making sure that affordability was considered in that, making sure that minority participation in the construction was in that rezoning. And our partners in the private sector stepped up to do that. But basically, if the property is zoned appropriately, the owner has the right to build what it is zoned to do. Rezonings, we often try to influence public policy, and when we actually put money into a project, public money, that's when we say to them, we want to further these goals. And one of our goals is to try to make sure that housing is built in locations where people have jobs and transportation.
Which brings us to the Blue Line extension. It's been difficult for the city to encourage developers to build affordable housing in various different parts of the city because land costs are high in those parts of the city and they want to put up a profitable property there. But you have suggested that we should target complexes in fast or target areas that are fast gentrifying in the West Side and NoDa. Is it too late for NoDa?
I don't think that it's too late for NoDa. But maybe it won't be as aggressive as what if we could look in our hindsight and say what we wanted to do, what we have tried to preserve a deeper mix, but it's not too late. We're working really hard to look along the transit lines for anything that can be done to make sure that people can live along the transit line. But I can't do anything about the past. So sometimes you've got the hand that you're dealt, and we have to start looking at that and saying, what do we do going forward? I would hope that we would be able to have some influence. It's not going to be what you would have done if you had known what was going to happen.
This decision to spread affordable housing, which has mixed success, was made during the Anthony Fox era when he was mayor. Given the scarcity of land and the realities of growth and development, you've now stated that we need to be more flexible in this approach. What would that flexibility change?
You know what, for me it would change, and I use this as an example. When we look at Bates Ford Road and from the I-77 exchange all the way out to Sunset Road, we know that there is really great housing out there, but we need better housing and greater cost housing there. So my flexibility is that we shouldn't always be thinking of affordable. Sometimes what we need to do is invest in housing that people will choose to use for market rate so that we can preserve the value of the neighborhoods that were built in the 60s and the 70s. So I'm a member of Friendship Missionary Baptist Church, and right across the street is a wonderful middle-class neighborhood. But as people are changing and aging and it becomes more rental instead of a home occupied, owner occupied, we've got to stabilize that. So in my mind, that what we ought to be doing is not just looking at where we put housing that's more affordable, but raising affordability in certain communities. And I say that because we want that corridor to have more market opportunities. And the same thing along Albemarle Road. I think that there are some opportunities that we need to go up and not just down.
Though we've had incentives on the books for developers to include in new developments affordable housing units or set aside a portion of the development for affordable housing, not all that many developers have taken advantage of those incentives. But Republican City Councilmember Tariq Bukhari sees a bigger role for the private sector. He believes it would be in their best interest to help, and he says he's already been talking to some of them.
Challenging them to think about how can we proactively bring to the table some ideas that connect economic development with upward mobility using affordable housing as a tool. And everyone's kind of nodding their heads and saying, yeah, you know, maybe we could do something like that.
Is this really a new approach? I mean, it sounds like he's having some success or that they might be receptive in the moment. But how is this different from what we've been doing?
You know, the best thing about our new council members is they bring us new ideas and new energy. And so what I believe Councilmember Bukhari is doing is challenging us to look at this differently and to look at how we have our policies so that we can accomplish what he's saying. So what if you break it down, his conversation is really around if you have a really good job, we don't have to talk about affordability of housing, that if jobs pay you enough, then you can go out in the private sector and find the place that you want to live. And I think that's an important concept. What we've got to do is translate that into how do we create those great jobs? How do we build the system for training and development? It's both
how do
sides.
You? Government doesn't create jobs. So,
government does not create jobs.
So how do you do that?
The way that government contributes to the success of the private sector is making it possible when their workforce comes in that they have a way to get to work. So transportation is really a key factor, that we have amenities when people want to come to Charlotte, that they know that they have open space. If you want to have an area where there's biking instead of taking a car and paying for the parking, how do we do that? So we're, I think, on our way there. This is one of the things that's exciting about us. How do we do things that support opportunities for those people that create it and talking to them about what's important? The Charlotte Trail, the Greenway Trail that we're going out to UNC Charlotte, the Blue Line opening in March with March Madness, I think that those are things that we're doing really well. So we need to just do more of them.
I want to come back to this new energized city council in a second, but Richard on Facebook says, should revised zoning be part of the solution to the affordable housing crisis?
Yes.
Okay, let's short and sweet. So let's go to this new city council, which has six young millennials on it. Tariq Bukhari.
What does young mean here? Like, you know,
anybody younger than me by a day.
Okay. Well,
Tariq Bukhari is on it. Several, five other people. I don't want to go through their names, but how's that? They're sticking. Many of them are sticking their toes in the public service waters for the very first time. How's it working out so far? We have about 40 seconds.
So, yes, they are sticking their toes in for the first time, and I would say that we are both challenged by that, but also energized by it, and I really mean that. I know that when sometimes I can say, okay, this is what the policy is, and let's keep going. And they would say, well, what is the policy? And I automatically assume that people know these things. Mm. So I have had to spend more time walking through, along with the other members that have been on council, what our policies are, and then listening to what makes a difference.
And I want to talk some more with you about these new council members and this new city council, and go back to that program you mentioned a little while ago, NACA. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Mayor Vi Lyles, the first in our monthly series of conversations. I hope you're coming back next month. I mean, this first conversation may put you off your food. Who knows?
No, there's nothing better than talking to your audience.
Well, it's our first in our series of monthly conversation with Vi Lyles, the new Charlotte mayor, and we're welcoming your comments and questions as well. It, by all the means available, charlottetalks at wfae.org. That would be email, Twitter at charlottetalks. You can get to us through Facebook, and you can get to us on the phone, 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323. This new city council, how would you compare them, the city council you preside over, with the city council you were a member of?
There's a lot of change, and I'm going to speak plainly and honestly, that when you have six new members that are elected and feel that they were elected to bring about change and they're bonding, and you've got to integrate with the existing five members and a new mayor.
Right.
It isn't just, you know, hunky-dory or, you know, everybody's walking hand in hand. The good thing about it is that we're not walking hand in hand. We're listening. Those six council members were elected by people that said, I believe in you and your ideas that you spoke about. Last week, we had our first strategy session where we said we would have a dialogue, and we spoke from about 5:15 until 8:45. And I think that I counted interactions among council of over 100.
Wow.
That means that there was real conversation going on, real feedback, and it was just really one of those moments that for the first time I thought everybody's saying what they need to say, and now how do we shape this into something that moves us forward? My challenge is that we need to do things more quickly. And I've said this to our city council members, every individual, it's not enough to send things to committee for information. They've got to come out with recommendations. And I'm so pleased that what we've set is a deadline for committee actions for 90 days to say, if you're asked to do some work, bring it back to us in 90 days with a recommendation. Report to us on a more frequent basis. My philosophy as mayor is that for the city council and the mayor, that we have shared information, shared accountability. We may have differences in what we decide to do, but we're all going to know that we have a responsibility to know the subject matter, to make a decision that we'll be held accountable for, and to move forward.
You, during the campaign, and several of the current city council members during their campaigns for election, talked about the time for talk being over and that the time for action is now. Is that part of this 90-day responsibility window?
Absolutely. Our retreat was where I thought it was the first example. We spent 4 hours on affordable housing. And what is our strategy and what are we going to do? And we actually chose out of that several actions that we thought we could take within 90 days. We've got to be prepared for the budget, and we have a bond referendum this fall. And so what will we have on that bond referendum? And that retreat was essential to taking that first step of action. I measure this time in quarters. What do we do the first quarter? We talk about what we're going to do. Second quarter, we have a plan. Third quarter, we begin to execute.
You have said that the community is starved for results. Those are your words.
Those are my words.
Starve for results from the city. So you want to work to get things done as quickly as possible. In what areas is the community starved for results?
When I go out and talk to people, and actually your calls, even though we've been talking about affordable housing, those are the kinds of questions that we get. People will often call me and say, how can I get a house? How can I get a mortgage? I've been evicted because of developmental pressure. So these are real life examples of where, as a city council, as a mayor, we impact individual people's lives because we have some accountability for what we've built and created without having that ability to serve everyone.
How can I get a house? That came up earlier today in a phone call from a listener, and I want to go back to what the advice you gave her about attending this assistance seminar over the weekend in just a second, but let me share with you some comments that have come in while we've been talking. John emails, will you follow Columbia's lead to ban bump stocks from our municipality? Bump stocks are those devices that attach to weapons so that they fire faster, and that was the device that was used in the shooting in Las Vegas. Columbia banned the use of bump stocks in December, but not the sale of them. So where do you stand on that?
So Mayor Steve Benjamin is a good friend of mine, grew up in the same hometown. My family still lives with him, and they voted for him.
What hometown is that?
Columbia, South Carolina.
Okay,
we know
check. That,
right? So Mayor Benjamin actually gave a presentation to the U.S. Conference of Mayors on this legislation, and I want to follow up on that and see what he's done and what other communities are doing. I think that the intent of what we've got to do around gun violence is being particularly addressed with our own initiatives around CMPD. Our chief has been talking about what are we going to do to make a difference when we bring not just preventing the next crime, but building a community in Hidden Valley and Lakewood. So we've got some initiatives going on there that I think really work well, and I'm really excited about what we're going to do and begin for this summer.
Larry emails, why must almost all cultural events be almost always downtown? If I want a chamber music or jazz or modern dance or theater or you name it, I have to go downtown, which I don't. Why can't we have some of these or all of these more convenient in, Matthews or Ballantyne?
Larry, I want you to come downtown, but I also understand the dilemma of coming downtown.
What's the dilemma?
So, I think it's called 485 and 77 right now. The Arts and Science Council has just done a report, and go online again to the ASC.org and take a look. But they are encouraging all of our major cultural institutions, which I think they count 12 in our major, to go out into communities and do more performances. I know because I've attended some of those on the west side. What I want to do is figure out where they are in South Charlotte and get that information for myself. I want you to go to ASC's website and get it so that you can see what they're doing. And then next month when I'm here, call me back and let me know what you did.
But part of the problem is the same reason they don't play Panthers games in Ballantyne or Matthews or up in Salisbury, because you have to have the infrastructure to support the event. And all that infrastructure is pretty much concentrated downtown. If you want to see a Broadway show, you can't put it in a high school auditorium. You have to put it at the Belk or at Ovens Auditorium. There are some things that can scale and travel, but not everything can. Is there any way would it be stupid to build a Belk-style theater in Ballantyne? Could you support it?
I think it would be difficult to duplicate existing facilities that are doing well and diluting the market.
Right.
I think that would be very tough. But I want to point out the Arts and Science Council did Cultural Arts Day. I was at the grocery store on Park Road, and this young man walked in, and he had been to the Aviation Museum,
mm-hmm.
which is off of Billy Graham. And again, one of the cultural assets that we have that's not downtown. So there are places that you can go, and I know that it's not necessarily the Broadway play, but you talk about Northwest School of the Arts, you talk about the theater that goes on in our high schools. There is some remarkable work being done, and we all ought to support it. But let's go and look at the Arts and Science Council. Let's look at our high school theater programs. You know, a couple of months ago, we went to the Blumenthal and heard one of our Northwest School of the Arts successful graduates produced with the guy from Odom?
Odom, yeah.
Odom.
I can't think of his first
come
last
in,
name.
And she sang
from
with him.
He's from Hamilton.
From Hamilton. Yeah. She sang with him, and it was mesmerizing.
She was better than he was.
Well, I can't say that. Okay.
That's Abby Corrigan.
That's
is her
right.
name.
Abby Corrigan.
And she's a homegrown talent who is now in Fun Home, mm-hmm. that's touring the country. She's the young lead in Fun Home, and she does not know this. What I like about Abby mm-hmm. is that she does not yet know how good she is. And if she does, she doesn't let it show,
and
which
that
is charming.
A remarkable asset.
Yeah, and she is, because she's unbelievably talented.
She is.
Twitter question. What's your favorite Charlotte lunch spot?
My desk. I've been eating lunch at my desk for about 8 weeks now. There are lots of favorite places that I like in Charlotte, and so I don't know if it would be fair to choose one. I could go anywhere from Zach's Hamburgers, which I shouldn't, to Portofino's Pasta, which I shouldn't. All of these are not healthy for me. I also had the opportunity this weekend to go over to Atherton Mill and meet the mayor of Atherton Mill, Mr. Barrington. Bought some collard greens and some of the most delightful croissants that I'd had in a long time. So
speaking of not healthy.
Not healthy. They were definitely not healthy. I would say that my goal as mayor is to travel through the city mm-hmm. and go places and drop in places that I can experience not just one favorite, but be able to talk about all of the assets that we have, and food is one of our greatest.
Let me go back and talk about something that you brought up during a conversation with one of our callers earlier in the program. Today, the Neighborhood Assistance Corporation of America, that's NACA that you referenced, was NACA.org. They're launching a new effort to help borrowers get affordable home loans. They worked during the Great Recession to keep struggling homeowners in their homes. This is a new program that they're starting in Charlotte.
Yes.
It's going to be ultimately around the country, but they're starting it here today with Achieve the Dream. It runs through Sunday. It's an
That's
event.
Right.
City Council or City of Charlotte's also part of this effort. In what way?
We support this by with our Charlotte House program. We talked about, I think it was Tamika that said, well, how do we do this for people that want affordable homes? So we have special programs called Charlotte House. And go online, take a look at it. We support NACA because they use the money that we would allocate for an individual to buy down your mortgage rate so that you can get into a house that you can afford.
Okay. Now, these mortgages will feature, as I'm told, no down payment, no closing costs, no fees at a balloon market fixed rate. I'm not sure what that means, because if it's a fixed rate, how is it a balloon?
At 15 or 30 years, I believe.
Okay. And they won't even consider your credit score. Prior to the Great Recession, one of the things that got us into trouble was getting people into homes and into mortgages, particularly, that they could not afford. And then the housing market collapsed, and a lot of these folks lost their homes because they were upside down in their mortgage, and they couldn't afford to pay it even if they weren't. One of the reasons that lenders want people to put down payment money into the deal is it puts skin in the game. You're less likely to walk away from your mortgage if the going gets rough. So is this a case of here we go again? Is this a wise thing to, altruism aside, is this a wise thing to do?
It is not a scam. It is not something that is...
I'm not saying it's a scam.
Oh, I said that. Sorry. Yeah, I didn't. Right. You didn't say that. But you said, is this creating the situation that we would fail people in the end by they're not able to afford their mortgages? So when they say that they don't consider your credit score, they didn't really say what they would consider. And I have heard people that have come in, an example, a nursing assistant at one of our hospitals said, well, you know, every day I could fulfill myself, I'd go and buy two Starbucks. One in the morning, one in the afternoon, and she went to credit counseling. They say they don't consider your credit score because they give you credit counseling, and then they tell you how to change your credit score. So what they're saying is don't look at yourself as what you are now, but look at what you can become, and sometimes it takes people a little bit of time to be able to get there, and they'll lay that path out for you. So this nursing assistant said, I learned that I could save money by just cutting out some of the things that I just did.
Right.
And it took her about a year and a half to get to the point that with the counselor, she could afford to buy a home. But she did it. She worked hard. She put
so
it down.
So am I hearing you say that they'll look at you and your habits and they'll get you on a program that eventually might qualify you to have one of these mortgages they're offering?
If you cannot qualify immediately, then they're going to work with you to qualify.
You only have a couple minutes left. Susan on Facebook, Cat's monthly passes are now over $108 a month. How are lower income families able to afford that cost? How can that price be brought down? Is this a city issue? My family can currently afford it, but what about others?
Yes, it is a city issue. We look at it. It's actually more of our entire county issue. You know, all of our communities contribute to the ability for our transit system to operate. Every town in the county and the county through our sales tax for that effort. So, yes, it is something that we are very concerned about. I think we have to look at it in both ways. If you can avoid having a car, you have saved yourself over $3,000 a month by living in the state of North Carolina. So it's still a good deal. It may sound very expensive, but remember, we've got to create abilities for people to not be car dependent so that they can save that money and do other things with their income, which is why we're focused so much on changing our bus system routes.
So we have 40 seconds left. Speaking of transportation, bikes, they're everywhere.
Yes, they are.
I mean, they are everywhere.
Those bright green colors and
orange and yellow. And they're multiplying like rabbits. They're everywhere. Was that the intent? For them to be everywhere.
I think the intent was to see how could we increase bike ridership. We have about a six-month time period where we gave all of the companies a chance to put those bikes out there. And at the end, we'll have to do an assessment, and we'll begin to talk about how do we feel about that. I think that biking is an important aspect of having really easy transportation and accessible and keeping cars off the road. How do we do it better? We'll talk about it.
Mayor Vilile is the first of our monthly meetings. She'll be back for another monthly meeting on March the 8th, but she'll also be returning on February the 21st with several other African-American leaders who are... African-Americans are at the top of the heap in every single leadership position in Charlotte. We're going to talk about that during a public conversation at McGlone Theater on February 21st. I look forward to seeing you then.
Thanks, Mike.